I can share with you part two. And I don't know how many parts there's going to be to this. I'll know when I'm done because it's like, you're done. Revealing the kingdom. Last week on Shabbat, I shared with you a progressive revelation of the kingdom of heaven, starting with Abraham. One thing was prominent when I was talking to you, but I did not elaborate on it. The covenants. Each covenant was prominent in establishing a foundational basis, further substantiating its prominence through Israel and the Jewish people. This connection is further substantiated in the New Covenant writings. Joel, the author of both of these statements that I'm going to share with you, provides further substantiation of the connection between the kingdom of heaven and the covenants. His first statement begins in Romans chapter 9. So if you have your Bibles, I'm not going to be in any one place today. So you're not going to, you don't need to put your finger someplace and hold it there. But you need to make sure that your fingers are limber because we are going on a journey. And it's a covenantal journey. Keeping in mind, you might also consider it a sentimental journey as well. That's going back in time. So the first of his statements, Romans chapter 9, verse 1. I am speaking the truth. As one who belongs to the Messiah, I do not lie. And also bearing witness, is my conscience governed by the Ruach HaKodesh? Keeping in mind, listen to that statement. It is my conscience. What I truly believe, but it's not of my own. It's governed by God's Spirit. My grief is so great, the pain in my heart so constant, that I could wish myself actually under God's curse and separated from the Messiah if it would help my brothers, my own flesh and blood. The people of Israel, they were made God's children. The Shekhinah, the glory of God, has been with them. The covenants, plural, are theirs. Likewise, the giving of the Torah, the temple service, and the promises. The patriarchs are theirs, and from them, as far as the physical descent is concerned, came the Messiah who is over all. Praise be Adonai forever. Covenants, plural. Pay attention to that. Because the second of Shaul's statements is not just to those in Rome or those, but it's to the nations in relation to the kingdom. Everybody go to Ephesians chapter 2, starting in verse 11. Therefore, remember your former state, you Gentiles, by birth, called the uncircumcised by those who merely because of an operation on their flesh are called the circumcised. At that time, past, had no Messiah. You were estranged from the national life of Israel. You were foreigners to the covenants, plural, embodying God's promise. You were in this world without hope and without God. The covenants embody God's promise. What is the promise? Ultimately, the promise is the kingdom. Last Shabbat, I had made reference to each of the covenants being part of establishing the kingdom through Israel, in that each made reference to an aspect of the kingdom. Let me review a little bit. Abraham, covenant with Abraham, indicates that there will be kings that will descend from him. Genesis 17, 6 and 7. Yaakov, through Abraham and this covenant, would come his grandson Yaakov, who then blesses his son with one being Judah, conveying the scepter would not depart from him, indicating an aspect of kingship. Genesis 49:10. Then you have Moses, the covenant of Moses, otherwise known as the covenant of Sinai or the Sinai covenant. Israel will desire to have a king like the other nations, and Adonai will later grant them their desire. This is Deuteronomy 17, 14, and 15. Then you have the Davidic covenant. The line of David would as one who would rule over Israel would be everlasting. 2 Samuel 7, verses 12 through 16. That's last week. That's the foundation for moving forward. Each covenant is represented in establishing the kingdom of heaven, as is referenced in Matthew's gospel 30 times. Yet very little is truly understood about the covenants Adonai has made with Israel. The Abrahamic covenant is the first covenant that establishes a relationship with a single individual, unlike the Adamic or Noahic covenants, which are identified as being universal. The Abrahamic covenant is the first non-universal covenant Adonai makes. It is foundational in that it establishes a basis by which Adonai will work. Think of it as a framework. Think of it as the frame of a house, yet fully constructed. You have the framework, the shell of it. For which, here is the foundation. Now, Adonai said to Avram, get yourself out of this country, away from your kinsmen and away from your father's house, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you, and I will make your name great. And you are to be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse anyone who curses you. And by you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. This is the foundation. And then from there, the outer shell will be established. From here, Adonai will build upon the foundation of this promise in later revealing to Abraham the promise of an heir to this promise. Land that will later represent the dwelling place for Abraham's descendants, who will become so numerous that they become their own nation. This covenant will be reaffirmed with his sons Yitzhak and grandson Yaakov, whose name will be changed to Israel and will become the name of the nation, for whom the nation will be identified. If that was only enough, there is more. Then the Mosaic covenant, also known as the Sinai covenant, will be a covenant that Adonai makes with the people of the descendants of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, further establishing the foundation of the covenant made with Abraham, yet in addition reveals to the people the mitzvot and ordinances of Adonai, that they, as for their part of the covenant, are commanded to follow. Exodus chapter 19, verses 7 and 8. Moses came, summoned the leaders of the people, and presented them with all these words which Adonai had ordered him to say. Verse 8, all the people answered as one, everything Adonai has said we will do. Moses reported the words of the people to Adonai. Yet keeping in mind, Exodus 19 comes before Exodus 20. Didn't matter what he said they would do it. Why? Well, this little thing happened called the Exodus. And keeping in mind, they may have struggled here and there. They saw the outstretched arm of God move in mighty ways and in many ways. So keeping in mind, whatever he says, yes, we'll do. Keeping in mind, that was easier said than done. Thus, the commands given by Adonai to Israel establish Israel as a goy kadosh, a holy nation. A holy nation, not by their own might or strength, but by the very word of Adonai, as Shaul conveys in his letter to Rome, going back to verses 4 and 5. The people of Israel, they are God's children. The Shekhinah, the glory of God, has been with them. The covenants are theirs. Likewise, the giving of the Torah, the temple service, and the promises. The patriarchs are theirs, and from them, as far as the physical descent is concerned, came the Messiah. You can't get much more holy than what God has done through Israel. This insignificant, small group of people becoming a nation would, in essence, impact the entire world. Just as Yeshua, how do I put this, transformed the world by his birth, his death, his burial, his resurrection, he came out of these covenants, the promises. So what shook the world, we saw the physical aspect of Yeshua, but it was God's covenant promises that shook the world. So what happens to the Abrahamic covenant with the covenant of at Sinai, when the covenant of Sinai is ratified through the sprinkling of blood? What happens to the Abrahamic covenant? Nothing. Nothing happens to it. It is the foundation by which this covenant is established. The Mosaic covenant, the Sinai covenant, is foundational because of the Abrahamic covenant. In other words, the Mosaic covenant builds upon the Abrahamic covenant Adonai made with Abraham. And keeping in mind, many may tell you that it replaces it. No, it doesn't replace it. You're going to see a noticeable theme occur as I go forward. So what happens to the Mosaic covenant when Adonai makes a covenant with David regarding his throne? Nothing. Nothing happens to it because the Abrahamic covenant and the Mosaic covenants are the basis for which Adonai makes the covenant with David. So because it's the basis or the foundation, it does not mean that it gets put away, set aside, put on a shelf to gather dust. Each covenant Adonai made builds upon the previous covenant. It does not replace it. Whatever popular theories people have, oh, well, the new covenant has replaced these. Keeping in mind, that's not God's MO. That's not how he's doing things here. So we now come to the promise of the new covenant in Jeremiah 31, for which many have taught that it replaces the Mosaic covenant. Yet if they were to pay attention to the previous covenants, this is not what Adonai does. Each covenant further substantiates the previous while revealing more about the kingdom of heaven. So what we will see about the new covenant will be no different. Everybody go to Jeremiah 31. We'll be here for a little bit. Jeremiah 31:31. Here the days are coming, says Adonai, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Who is the promise being made to? The Jewish people. Why are Israel and Judah being mentioned? Because at the time Jeremiah is writing, he's writing to a divided kingdom. So God's making sure that this new covenant is inclusive, because when you get further on, it says Israel. It doesn't mention Judah because it talks or implies the reunification of the kingdom. So it is made with the same people for whom Adonai made the previous covenants with, the descendants of Abraham. Is everybody getting the picture here? Nothing has changed here, as the next verse will attest. Verse 32, it will not be like the covenant I made with their fathers on the day I took them by their hand and brought them out of the land of Egypt, because they for their part violated my covenant, even though I for my part was a husband to them. Now keeping in mind, yes, something did happen. People of Israel did not live according to the promise that they agreed to back in Exodus 19. It did not nullify the aspect of the covenant. And if you think about it, Adonai doubles down on Israel. He doesn't say, okay, well, I'm going to fold my cards and I'm going to deal a new hand to another nation and we're going to see what happens with them. He split his cards, and he bet on both of them. He, in essence, doubled down. Yes, I'm using a blackjack scenario with regards to God and the covenants. Yes, I know. Adonai led them out of the land of Egypt, thus making a covenant with his people as was established through the covenant he made with Abraham. So now Adonai is making a new covenant with Israel, for they broke the covenant made at Sinai. Adonai, full of emet and chesed, full of truth and mercy, in spite of their transgression, makes a new covenant with the people who defiled the first one. Verse 33, for this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel. Notice he's now talking about a reunified kingdom. He's not talking about a divided kingdom, but his kingdom is one kingdom, unified, not divided. For this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, says Adonai, I will put my Torah within them and write it on their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people. What does Adonai do but confirm the previous covenants, not replace them or do away with them? For he does not change who the covenant is made with. It is still with the children he brought out of Egypt, the descendants of Abraham, and empowers the covenant whereby he will put his commands, his Torah, within them and write it on their hearts. The flesh of the heart, not the hardness of stone. So here we're seeing a transformation, something unique about this new covenant, yet it's building upon the foundations of all the covenants before. And then verse 34, no longer will any of them teach his fellow community member or his brother, know Adonai. For all will know me from the least of them to the greatest, because I will forgive their wickedness and remember their sins no more. What is lacking in the Mosaic covenant is power. That is the power of the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit. Yet with this new covenant, the power to not only forgive sin, but remember it no more, builds upon Moses, in that it is through Torah given by Moses that we even know what sin is. Romans chapter 7 and verse 7. Therefore, what are we to say? That the Torah is sinful? Heaven forbid. Rather, the function of the Torah was that without it, I would not have known what sin is. For example, I would not have become conscious of what greed is if the Torah had not said, thou shalt not covet. So now this is written inside you. God's commands are written inside you. In other words, they become part of you. They are an extension of you, just as your arm is an extension of your body. They are an extension of who you are. Now it is written on our hearts. It is close to us. Keeping in mind, this is a promise that Adonai made to Moses. Everybody go to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Verse 14. On the contrary, the word is very close to you, in your mouth, even in your heart, therefore you can do it. This flies in the face of the premise that gets taught, well, it was impossible for everyone to keep the whole law. Then God's a liar. Yet what people don't understand about Torah, and if they would study it more, they would know, which you've learned since being here, that not all Torah applies to all people. Therefore, no one is required to keep the whole law by itself. You're only responsible for what applies to you. And ultimately, we are given power for what has been written on our hearts. Everybody go to Acts chapter 1. Told you we're getting a workout today. Chapter 1. Verse 8, but you will receive power when the Ruach HaKodesh comes upon you. You will be my witnesses both in Jerusalem and in all of Judea and Samaria, indeed to the ends of the earth. What transpired just approximately 50 days before this? The resurrection of Messiah. The empowerment that would, in essence, come to the point where this promise would become fulfilled. Where he would leave and his spirit would be brought forth. A promise of this new covenant that was not part of any of the previous covenants, yet is established by all of the previous covenants combined. Is everybody still with me? Everybody go to Romans chapter 8. Shaul talks about the lack of power. Romans chapter 8, verse 3. For what the Torah could not do by itself, because it lacked the power to make the old nature cooperate, God did by sending his own Son as a human being with a nature like our own sinful one, but without sin. God did this in order to deal with sin, and in so doing, he executed the punishment against sin in human nature. So what happens here? The Spirit that resides in you and the Word residing in you are now both in you to deal with this pesky little thing that Shaul calls your old nature. Because if you're born again, which I talked about last week, you are now born with a new nature. So verse 4, so that the just requirement of the Torah might be fulfilled in us, who do not run our lives according to what our old nature wants, but according to what the Spirit wants. Everybody understand? One, your life is not your own anymore. It was bought with a price. And now the one who governs your life resides in you. And what resides in you is in essence the written word that became flesh and now dwells in us. Not that the Torah was imperfect or unattainable, but we as a vessel, corrupted by the adversary's transgressions, lacked the power from above to truly embrace them with all of our heart. So Deuteronomy 30, everybody go back there. Because after verse 14, there's this promise that's associated with it. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 14. On the contrary, the word is very close to you, in your mouth, even in your heart. Therefore, you can do it. Look, I am presenting you today with on one hand life and good, and on the other death and evil, and that I am ordering you today to love Adonai your God, to follow his ways, and to obey his mitzvot, regulations and rulings. For if you do, you will live and increase your numbers. And Adonai your God will bless you in the land you are entering in order to take possession of it. It's right there. That is a kingdom promise. Yet keeping in mind, it's been revealed through the covenants. Yeshua makes no mention of any of the previous covenants being set aside or made obsolete. I shared with you a few weeks ago, in my sermon, When Old is Not Old, that in this case, old does not mean obsolete, but rather an affinity, an affection for something that has been around for a while. Yet what has transpired here is that part of the covenant from Sinai is now ineffective. It's not sufficient anymore. In other words, the sacrificial system that was used to make atonement for transgression is no longer effective because it has been empowered with the sacrificial system under the new covenant, the blood of Messiah, King of the Kingdom of Heaven. That is our sacrificial system for the atoning of our transgressions. Goats and bulls are no longer sufficient for us to make atonement. Everybody go to Hebrews chapter 9. Your Bible should probably fall to this page. I go to it so often. Verse 13, for if the sprinkling of ceremonially unclean persons with the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer restores their outward purity, then how much more the blood of Messiah, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself to God as a sacrifice without blemish, will purify our conscience from works that lead to death so that we can serve the living God. So some people tend to lump everything all together when you can't lump everything all together. The sacrificial system is part of Torah. It's part of the Mosaic covenant, but it is not the only thing that's part of the covenant. Remember Shaul's words in Romans 7:7, without Torah, I would not known of what sin is. Yet what are we dealing with here? But in other words, transgression. It still has to be identified. Sin hasn't changed. 1 John chapter 3 talks about sin as violating Torah. Everybody go to 1 John chapter 3. Read for yourself. Because I'm going to talk about what Yeshua says. Yet are people paying attention to the very words of Yeshua? Don't think that I have come to abolish the Torah or the prophets. I've not come to abolish, but to complete the Torah and the prophets. What resides in the Torah and the prophets? The covenants. The covenants, not to mention the mitzvot that have been written on your heart. Verse 18 of chapter 5 of Matthew. Yes, indeed, I tell you that until heaven and earth pass away, not so much as a yud or a stroke will pass from the Torah, not until everything that must happen has happened. In other words, sin is still sin. God has revealed everything that is sin, and it's in His Word, and it's the transgression of Torah. It's not this complicated. Now here's the kingdom connection. Verse 19, so whoever disobeys the least of these mitzvot and teaches others to do so will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. Some mitzvot are not a deal breaker that will keep you out of the kingdom. I've said before, sin is sin, yes, but there are sins that are more severe than others. Anything associating a death penalty with it, bad. Anything where, okay, well, you have to clean and you'll be clean in the morning or whatever, not so bad. You're keeping in mind what God has written on our heart to do is not to say, oh, well, that's not so bad. I'm not going to worry about that. I need to focus on these ones. He wrote all of Torah on your heart. So it's all there. Yet we in our minds tend to say, oh, well, that's not a big deal. Oh, well, that's for the Jewish people. Well, no, I'm not going to worry about that. The concept is righteousness because, verse 20, for I tell you that unless your righteousness is far greater than that of the Torah teachers and the Pharisees, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. What's the bar? Righteousness. According to whom? God, not us. So here is the kingdom connection with Torah and the covenants. As was the connection between Adonai and Israel, not to mention the disconnection of Israel having violated the covenant given at Sinai, for which they broke. It was transgression of Adonai's mitzvot and an unrepentant heart that led to the need of a new covenant for Israel. And ultimately, the new covenant made the path for the nations coming to Adonai much more accessible. There's this talk of circumcision and uncircumcision. There's a whole chapter in Acts 15 about, well, what do we do with these Gentiles who are coming to faith in the Jewish Messiah? Do we circumcise them or not? Then we have Shaul saying, well, if you were circumcised, you remain circumcised. If you're uncircumcised, you remain uncircumcised. In other words, you don't have to convert to anything. But you have to, in essence, become transformed through the renewing of your mind. So when talking about the kingdom, it is not only important to establish its foundation, which we did last week, but also to establish the authority through Adonai's covenants, which is the basis. You can have a verbal contract, which is binding, but to have a written contract signed, notarized, for lack of another word, can be more powerful. Because it's not just one's word against another. Because some don't always live by their word when they make a verbal agreement. Yet when you have something documented, something signed, something ratified, in this case by the blood of Yeshua, by the words of the people documented in Torah, it is that much more valid. It is that much more powerful and binding. Not that one's word is not binding, but you don't want to create the appearance of a loophole or a back door to an agreement. Oh, well, I really didn't mean that. Or that's not what I intended when I said that. So here you have part two. The foundation of the kingdom is based on God's covenants. And you are partaking in what I would call the fruit of that. Torah has been written on your hearts. Promise. The Ruach HaKodesh resides in you. Promise. You are now empowered in the new covenant. With every other covenant holding that new covenant up. So do you walk in power or do you walk in weakness? Are you a weak sheep or are you a bold sheep? The power resides in you. Is your switch on? Are you connected? Do you have the mute button hit when you hear the Spirit? Oh, I'm not going to pay attention right now. I'll save that for later. The idea of a circuit, current flows through it. Yet along a circuit, you have many different devices. You have a switch which can interrupt the circuit. Then you have something at the other end of the circuit that is empowered by the circuit, a light bulb. These lights are connected to wires, and they have relays that when you flip a switch, there's a relay that goes on. It's known as a ballast. And it activates the light. Is your relay broken? Is your switch broken? Is your switch off? There should be nothing that impedes the power that resides in you. Because God has enabled you with it. So if everybody would please rise.